Hey everyone, thanks for listening. As we evolve at a whirlwind pace, primarily driven by technological advancement, it's essential to pause, step back, and look at the broader picture. Today, the debate around humanity and technology is more relevant than ever. In a world where the average person checks their phone 144 times a day and 69% have texted someone in the same room as them, the rapid proliferation of technology in every sphere of our lives raises an important question. Is our increased dependency on technology disrupting the essence of our humanity? Joining the show today are Raj Goodman Anand, CEO of Goodman Lantern, and Jane Peacock, digital strategist at Partners in Digital, to explore the intersection of human connectivity and digital evolution. To support the show, visit chrishood.com/show. Subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform, follow us on social media, and you can email me directly, show@chrishood.com. I'm Chris Hood, and let's get connected.
Connecting. Access granted. It's the Chris Hood Digital Show, where global business and technology leaders meet to discuss strategy, innovation, and digital acceleration. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Your digital evolution starts now. Here's your host, Chris Hood.
Has technology replaced our human connections? Let's find out and meet our guest. Raj, would you mind introducing yourself?
Thank you, Chris. Yeah, my name is Raj. Always hard to describe yourself, but I'll start with saying that I'm a father, a husband, based in the UK. I run a business called Goodman Lantern. We'll live with that in a second. It's my third business. In the past, I've sold one company. One went from zero to acquisition. Took my business from $7.5 million to $45 million in revenue. I'm a geek who loves technology and marketing. I got into marketing by chance. Currently, I run a company called Goodman Lantern. We are a content marketing agency. Our clients are in 5 continents, teams in 4. A big part of our company is our mission. Our mission is to empower women in technology and marketing, so much so that we're 80% women in our organization. So I do it to leave a legacy and to really hopefully change the world for a better place.
And Jane?
Fantastic. Thanks, Raj. And thanks, Chris. My name's Jane and I run a boutique consultancy called Partners in Digital. And we focus on customer-led digital transformation. So that's really helping organizations put the customer in the middle of everything that they do by embedding that person within their strategic plan. We look at really creating then a human experience that is actually surprising, delightful, friction-free, and helps customers get to where they want to get to. And we do that, we co-create the strategy, so it's often a co-creation process. So we bring everybody into the room and often people that aren't usually involved in that conversation. And we then develop the roadmap for the organization and we underpin it with a real focus on capabilities. So often bringing in partners or consultants or coaches to help build the capabilities within the internal team so that they can continue to drive the process moving forward. It's all about empowering and enabling the internal team. A little bit of personal stuff about me. I am a mum. I've raised 2 boys. So I think I learn more from them probably every day as they get older that I can take into my roles as a leader as well. And it's interesting, Raj, you said you're a tech who loves marketing. I'm a marketer who loves tech. So hopefully there'll be some interesting conversations as a result.
Well, I love the fact that you both included some of your human side of your portfolios and background. Maybe that is a good place for us to start today about humanity and technology. How do you think technology has influenced or impacted that change in culture that we see today?
Oh, wow. I'd probably look at the difference between generations. So I'm really interested in bringing different generations to the strategic table for that reason, because they've grown up exposed to so many different things. So my boys' generation, so alphas, they've been exposed to everything since they were little. So that means they can see everyone of different shapes and sizes and cultures from all around the world, and that informs who they are. And if you look at young kids today, they are actually really passionate about diversity and inclusion, really passionate about sustainability, simply because technologies enable them to be exposed to so much more than maybe my generation was.
I completely agree, Jane. I think that's a really interesting point you made there. I think just a bit of fun fact, I studied AI at university, did research in AI, and I always, you know, think about stuff from the perspective of technology and human beings. And I think there's a fundamental shift happening today, especially with, you know, more and more people getting to know about AI and what it can do. When I was at university doing research in AI, my mom thought AI was a study of UFOs, to like today when everybody knows what AI is, at least they kind of understand a bit about, well, ChatGPT potentially, or some of them might even know Midjourney, for example. I think we are in a major shift where during the Industrial Revolution, for the first time ever, technology made people working at home, maybe knitting at home, for example, or building a craftsman, building stuff at home or doing stuff in the farm, into the factories and offices of today. And now with technology, we're moving them back into their homes, maybe freelancing, for example, maybe sort of remote working, for instance. So I think we are, in one way, we're moving forward in our way of thinking and talking about technology changes to our lives. But in one other way, we are going back to what we did before the big Industrial Revolution and the factories and the big machinery which came into play. So I think, you know, it's hard to say which is faster, but they are currently co-creating, going fast and slow at the same time.
Do we see other areas where that kind of circle of life is materializing due to technology?
To kind of say, from my perspective, technology is a major player. Making it possible, it's become cheaper and faster to build stuff, to have stuff on in our homes, in our offices, allows us to work remotely. I mean, imagine, you know, 20 years back, this conversation would only happen if you were in the same room. But now we are effectively on three different continents, linked by the internet and a web browser, which I think is phenomenal. But what's interesting also is that, like, this is all part of content. It's a podcast. Some people will consume this via YouTube. Others will consume this via their podcast player. But fundamentally, content has been around for centuries. Famously, Napoleon used to do press releases to get more money for his war campaigns. And today, the medium is different. Today, we might have TikTokers. You know, perhaps Jane's kids are using TikTok or Instagram to communicate. We might be doing more LinkedIn, for example, but it's all content. And I think the form has changed, but the message and the value of the content is still there.
I think something that I'm noticing, or at least the conversations I'm having, is technology was often, or has been, all about, if I look at the marketing team context, it's all been about efficiency and productivity. And so we see then over time, marketing teams getting busier and busier and busier and doing more and more and more. And now with artificial intelligence coming in, there's just a different conversation happening. How do we actually use technology to create the space to do more of what matters to us, and therefore what does matter? And the conversations we're having really is about, well, it's the human interaction that matters. It's the connection that we're building that matters. And how can we then use the space that we've now got and the time that we've now got to really focus on that as a business and as a team?
From both a marketing and customer experience perspective, has AI impacted the human connection that we typically see in those types of services?
I definitely think, like, AI and, you know, chat has been around for a long time in different forms. And I think that organizations, when they jump to use it from a tech-led perspective, as in I'll use the tech to create efficiency within the customer experience, often it impacts negatively because I'm not considering the customer on the other side of that and what they actually want from this experience. So if we flip it and we look at really what does the customer want on that journey, there are actually human interventions that they still want and they will likely always want in that journey. So then it's a question of at what step in, say, 100 steps in that journey, can we use AI to remove the low value stuff and remove friction? And I think there's huge opportunities to do that.
Yeah, I would completely agree with Jane. I think when I first saw AI in people's hands, I was like, wow, are you going to replace human beings with AI? And, you know, we all agree that actually AI cannot replace human beings. It'll just make us more efficient. But equally, like, you know, if you go and buy products, if you go and buy a bag or some shirts, we still value handmade products. If you look at a lot of the luxury goods, for example, they'll often say this is handmade. It's made with love. And, you know, James made this amazing piece of art. You know, the person's name is there, the connection, the story is there. And that will perhaps never change. We'll always want to be linked with human beings. And it's also clear sometimes when you kind of get the content out or information out, if it's AI made or human made, and if it's human crafted or human created, the value is definitely higher. In fact, even today, just doing the same analogy of factories, you know, the end product, the end material we produce with factories is still done, it's a human QA. It's a real human being. Like my first job out of university was actually, I worked at a Parker Pen factory. My job was to look around the Parker Pen and just make sure there's no dents and marks on it. And I just like pass that QA test and put it into the other pile. And that was still a human process. There was no machine which could do that job better than human beings. I think today as well, I see in our organization as well, you know, the end work, the big, bulky, the majority of the real creative work is still human led. The research part can be done with AI, but human element is so important in that journey.
Those roles that you're talking about, and I think there's lots of them that we would argue only a human could do. But obviously, as technology is enhancing our lives, what do we think we need to be aware of to ensure that technology doesn't completely disrupt what we believe to be our human experience?
That's a really big question. And it's one that I've been pondering at the moment, even with my family, my boys, the teams I work with. And I think it really comes down to you have to be really conscious on the experience that you want from the technology and be really incredibly aware of it. And part of that is, you know, I personally am going on an education journey myself to understand like deeply what AI is and what it might do to my own role and what I want to then be holding on to. What's the human part of my experience or the human part of my role that I really want to hold on to and that I find really valuable? And I think we all have to do that. There's a great talk, I don't know if you guys saw it, Esther Perel, who really talked, she did a TED talk on intimacy, and she did a talk recently called The Other AI, so artificial intimacy. And I think that ultimately is a bit of a key to what is missing when we look at artificial intelligence. It's the intimacy, it's the humanity between people and between things. And we can definitely maintain that if we're conscious of it.
As I think about it more, and I sort of spend a long time thinking about like large language models like LLMs, like the ones we have with, you know, from Google or from OpenAI, all these ChatGPT are forms of what we call large language models, LLMs. And they're very smart, you know. So far they've been helping or distracting us on YouTube, Facebook, Google to kind of give us data or to suggest things to us because they feel that we'll consume that video more than this video, for example, or this is our bias. It has been used in that way. But then the other flip side of that is that there are this whole emergence of companionship through chatbots. So recently there was this lady, I don't know where she was based, but she's a jewelry designer, and she said that she's going to marry an AI bot. Because she felt she was more connected to the AI bot than any man she ever was with. And I thought that was really interesting. I don't know if that's going to be the trend or that's just, but there is an element of like, I mean, before I met my wife, there wasn't any sort of online dating apps. So I don't know much about them. I don't know. I've only heard about the phenomenon of swiping left, sorry, swiping right. But what I can say is that there's an element of connecting with people through the applications. You know, you chat with people, you're having communication with them, you believe that they are real people. And a lot of that initial interaction happens there. But for me personally, the face-to-face cannot replace the chats, the videos, the Zooms, because I actually really, like, I really missed that during the pandemic times, like really missed that. And I think that's one thing which I think is the human element of me, which is like, I want to meet people face to face. I can do the small talk, the initial communication through online, but without the face to interaction, without maybe, you know, having a meal together, having a coffee together, I just can't bond the same way. So maybe that's the human element for me. But time's to tell what's going to happen in the future. You know, I think it's still really early.
I think, Raj, there's a generational difference. I think, you know, like when I look at my experience and what I seek, I've definitely grown up seeking out human interaction as a priority. Whereas I look at my 15-year-old son and he's quite happy to live in Web3 and spend all of his money there and create meaningful relationships that feel really meaningful to him and friendships and, you know, strategize over what they're going to do in the game. So really deep collaborative stuff they're trained to do. Whereas my generation, it was, and I'm a result of that. I value human touch, human connection, eyeball to eyeball in person. So I think generationally there's a bit of a difference.
I mean, you both touched on the intimacy and that human connection. And I think technology, or at least artificial intelligence, where we are still struggling with the concept is simply in the authenticity of that relationship. When we are in person, we can more or less judge if the conversation is authentic, if it's meaningful to us. Now, yes, I agree that some of that can be captured online, but from a purely technical perspective, it still comes across as automated and in times unauthentic.
I think, Chris, one of the interesting conversations I had recently, so I'm dealing with an online retailer at the moment, and they reported that a lot of their customers are actually afraid, is it a real person? There's a lot of negativity thinking, even when it is a real person, that it's not. So there's fear, and I think it's important to understand how the customer feels within this relationship and start a conversation about it, and be willing to step away from AI or chat when it's not valuable or does create some sort of negative impact for the customer.
Yeah, I would agree. I think the example of Web3, where you have augmented reality, for example, or you have VR headsets on and you're looking around stuff, while the other person might have an avatar for themselves in the video game, there's a feeling which we have when we interact with real human beings, that feeling of like being connected, joint experiences, for example, even if it's represented as an avatar, it still is that feeling we get. So for me, maybe it's a physical sort of in-person experience, but for some, it might be different. But there's still that feeling of human beings, which is a little different. It can be mimicked by AI, and it'll get better at that as you reach that sort of next AGI, which is, you know, sort of the top, as it were, of intelligence with artificial general intelligence. When that happens, we're going to have a separate challenge. But for now, I think we still bond when we put humans together in an experience. I think that's very, as Chris was saying, very authentic, that kind of experience of being very authentic. But it's scary. I think it's very scary because, you know, even if AI doesn't have emotions, it can mimic emotions. It can learn that, well, when you're sad, you say this. When you're happy, you say this. And when you're unsure, you say this. So it can have its own way to iterate or simulate emotions. And that's the scary bit about it. And I think at some point, again, we might come back to the same thing. Well, maybe you know, some of us will not value the fact that we are together in real life. That's more authentic. But again, time will tell what happens with that.
I think that just touching on your point there, Chris, about intimacy, one of the things we focus on is this idea of customer intimacy through digital, like your digital ecosystem. And it really is like in person, I can look at you, Raj or Chris, and I can see you're nodding or you're leaning in or you're smiling or you're taking a breath, and that body language I can respond to. In the digital context, there's also, you know, like triggers, data that we can look at that shows us, is the customer leaning in? Are they leaning away? Are they sort of interested or not interested? And we can use that to then deepen the intimacy digitally. It'll never replace, you know, human to human, but we still can create, like, have the effort to do that and use our data to really get those insights and feedback to really transform the way we share our stories.
Within that sharing of our stories, what type of ethical considerations are we concerned about in this age of technology?
Well, I think for me, it's really around who owns the data, who has created the language model. Like I think you touched on it, Raj, you know, are there biases built in? Only recently I was reading a bit about, you know, built-in racism, you know, so those kind of things I worry about. I don't have a lot of knowledge and understanding of that, but those are probably the concerns I have. And then probably the speed with which we've started using ChatGPT. So I've worked in tech for 2 decades now, and the internet took 10 years for a lot of people to get on board, and ChatGPT took 3 months without anybody having to influence or get them to use it. It was just suddenly being used in organizations without any governance or any sort of framework around it to either question, is it right, is it wrong, is there a bias, is there not a bias, should I be sharing this content, you know, within this open system or not. So those kind of things haven't been set up, and that worries me a little bit.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think also for me, the first step would be for tools or applications or networks actually sort of clarifying if who they're dealing with is actually AI. Number two is that data which they interact or which we provide is theirs or ours. If it's because we are on their platform, it belongs to them. Are they recording that data as a way to train their algorithms or their AI? Because this for me is a challenge. But suddenly they understand my tone. If they're recording my voice, for example, you can use tools to simulate my voice, soon my face, my emotions. And so basically it's kind of hard to like really mimic me completely. So, you know, who owns that data as I sort of happily interact with that tool on their platform, for example, on Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn, et cetera, et cetera. I think that is the beginning of this question about the ethical stuff. But then also, as Jane mentioned about, you know, how are we training the big models? Who owns that? If you're using Picasso's art to create Picasso-like art, then is that like copyrighted? Is it not copyrighted? Is that inspiration? Or it's that, you know, where does this actually sit? And then, you know, art is still probably easier. How about writing? Because writing, it's hard to even pinpoint who owns that stuff. So where does that sit, for example? If you're making a clone of Harry Potter, for example, we've gone to the books, for example, and using clones for that, then what happens there then, for example? So it's very difficult to even pinpoint which bit is owned by whom. I think the data owner should be able to decide if they want to part with the data or not. There should be, for example, on the web, there's a thing called robot.txt, which is used to stop bots from Google or other search engines to say, you can come to a site and crawl data, or you say you can't. We need that, something like that as well for AI, for instance. So there's a lot to go through. I think we're still at the very tip of the iceberg, and I think there's a lot to kind of dive deeper into to kind of really build something much more robust for the future.
I think the point around, you know, AI and art, there's definitely been a lot of conversation recently around the point you were making, Raj, around if I've created all of this art and then suddenly the AI Midjourney is using that art to create something very similar to my art, then that creates a problem for the original artist. And if we want to be nurturing all of the and retaining all of these amazing human skills that have been developed over a long period of time, we need to have something in place that protects that artist and their IP, which doesn't exist at the moment.
Yeah, I agree. I think the thing is that is it the challenge between inspiration and copying. I think the question is, where does like you draw a line? That's the bit which I find very challenging, because I find like, well, we can't really say in the past, if I use something for inspiration, then, well, I'll just inspire it. But now I can just copy it through AI. So where do we draw the line? That's the bit I find very challenging.
I think generative AI is one thing, but if we took that to a more human perspective and changed the scenario a little bit, imagine a psychiatrist. Would we be comfortable with sitting down with an AI psychiatrist who is trying to nurture some sort of human response back?
I would probably, the Esther Perel example is a really good example. They create an AI of Esther Perel and it was lacking the deep human intimacy. And I think any role where you need that ability to sense, like you were saying, Raj, there's an energy exchange when there's humans together that brings so much more value, and that was missing. So for me personally, I'd still go for the human psychiatrist, but doctors is a whole other question, because I'm totally keen to get into AI for health related.
And Chris, I'll answer your question by saying, like, by just kind of remembering the fact that I read somewhere that while on a plane, most of it is not flown by human beings. It's actually flown by programs. Like, we trust our lives, you know, with AI like tools to keep us safe midair, where we have nothing else but that. You know, we have pilots there, but they are probably too engaged and they want to just be used for takeoff and landing, for example. So for me, you know, that's an interesting scenario. But the other one is that recently, my uncle was not feeling well, and you know, he was in the emergency for a few days, and I was getting reports from the doctors on what's going on, and they were just too busy, and I would just get reports from the doctors and like lab reports, for example. Now I have no idea what that actually meant. So what I did was I scanned those reports from image to text using a tool online and passed it all to ChatGPT, for example, and asked it to explain it to me like a 5-year-old or a 10-year-old or 20-year-old, whatever it might be, it's a layman, for example, and it could really get down to the detail of what's going on. Like, I could explain to my uncle what was the issue with him. Now that, for me, allows me to get a more human perspective on health challenges. So maybe for some things I might prefer, like for landing and takeoff, I prefer pilots to do that for me. But for mid-air, I'm happy with like robots and AI to kind of take over. But I think it's like horses for courses, right? So I prefer something for AI to kind of help me with, and other places, you know, I prefer human beings. And I think what's interesting for me is that I often think about like the movie Iron Man, where you have the Iron Man, you know, like navigating his screens and like asking his bots to kind of answer the different things. Well, bolt on this on my scooter, get my car ready for me. And I think of the AI in that way, that we're going to the era where we will have AI like wisdom of the whole world packed into our garage or our computers, and they'll be there to help us out. I don't think of AI as a database. And sometimes people say, oh, this ChatGPT is stuck in time. 2021 is where it stops. Well, yes, that's true. But also it has all that logic behind it. I think the logic behind it is very powerful for me. And I use it to the strengths, for example, and not the weaknesses.
We all have mobile devices in our hands pretty much constantly every day. It's not a far-fetched conversation to believe that in the near future, we'll be having personalized AI that travel with us in some form, whether it's on our phones or something else, that can have that level of communication and insight, be able to personalize and customize experiences no matter what store we walk into. So I definitely think the Iron Man example is a great one. For our final question before we wrap it up, what challenges or hesitations might you have about technology as we look towards the future?
I think there is a real challenge. I mean, especially I think AI is the bigger one, because AI is the one which we can't actually pinpoint with programming language, that, you know, what is the logic behind. For example, I'm just going to give the example of ChatGPT again. ChatGPT 2.5 to 3.3 was okay. Suddenly 3.5 was far better than the previous versions. And it's bizarre because not even the scientists knew that it's that good. Another example, AI, you know, they actually train ChatGPT like tools to answer questions in English. It trained them, they trained them all the time, and suddenly could answer questions in Persian. How did that happen? No one really knows. And I think the challenge is that we don't know how far AI really is. We might be able to guess some of this stuff, but we don't know accurately where it is. And as we train the different versions or models of AI, it can get far better and it could create challenges for us. And this is why there's a whole sort of focus on stopping the training to go that quickly. I mean, obviously Elon Musk and other people have said, let's slow it down a little bit, because I don't know really how fast it is or how far it really has gone. So that for me is a real challenge. We need to start to really think about how do you put safeguards in for us so that one day it doesn't take us, you know, take us over basically in one form or the other. So that for me is the biggest challenge. I think the second challenge for me is the dependence of our lives on technology. You know, how will we become in the future? Moving from an abacus or abacus to calculators, you know, maybe made us a little bit, maybe not as sharp potentially, but also made us more efficient. So is it about being like challenged intellectually, or is it about being more efficient? Where does the balance sort of set?
Oh, that's great, Raj. I just noted down, I think the most current topical challenge for me is really around the education system. And in Australia, one of our states you can't use AI in schools. The system within education, and I don't know where it's like where you guys are based, but it's falling behind. And so it's really causing our kids to fall behind as well, rather than education embracing AI and then helping our kids to know how to use it. And so that's the one challenge. And I think, the second one is really down to ourselves. Like, there's a moment in time where we're being disrupted by this new technology. I think unlike any other time in history that I've experienced in my lifetime, and really are people considering how is this disrupting me as a person, whether I'm, you know, someone who's working in a store, or someone who's a mortgage broker, or someone who's a consultant like me, or someone who's working in marketing, how's it disrupting me? And how will my role change in the next 5 years so that I can start moving in that direction? I think people aren't thinking about that. And I think it's moving so quickly that, you know, there's a lot of talk about people losing jobs, and that concerns me. And I think there's not a lot of talk around, and a lot of the time I spend is with my teams going, how are you going to change? How are you going to evolve? How are you going to disrupt yourself so you're ready for the role you need to play in a year's time?
All of this is fascinating. What you both said is fairly inspirational and things for us to look forward to in the future. Thank you, Raj. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris, for the opportunity. Thank you. Thank you, Jane.
And thank you, Jane.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Raj. It's really, really fun.
And thanks to all of you who are listening. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform and leave a review. Your feedback helps us improve, grow, and reach a wider audience. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for the show, you can connect with us throughout social media and online at Chris Hood Show or chrishood.com. And please share this episode with your friends, family, colleagues, or anyone else looking to grow their business and start their own digital evolution. Until next week, take care and stay connected.